said, I'm going to be talking today about some research we've done that looks at the attitudes of parents in several key areas of their teens' driving safety. I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Lori Hellinga, who works with me at the Institute, and Emily Hare, who's with Preusser Research Group. It's well established that teen drivers have a higher crash risk per mile driven. Actually, this is the same slide that Kelly had shown you, and I want to make the sort of the opposite point from Kelly that you can see here per mile travel, the crash rates for fatal crashes and for crashes of all severity. And teen drivers have the highest crash risk, rivaled only by the very oldest drivers. We also know from several studies that crash risk for teens is the very highest when they first began to drive without their parent in the car. This is a study that looked at drivers in four states in the Northeast and tracked their crash rate per mile driven month by month after they got their license. For females, we show females and males separately. And for both genders, you can see there's a very dramatic drop in crash rates immediately after a licensure. So parents are right. They're certainly on the right track to worry the most when their teens first begin to drive without the parent in the car. And as I'm sure that you know, the licensing system for teens in this country has really been transformed in the last decade through the enactment of graduated licensing laws in almost all states. And parents, we believe, are the primary enforcers of those laws. They're difficult for police officers to enforce. And in many other respects, parents really make the key decisions about their teens' driving safety. So we wanted to do a survey where we interviewed parents face-to-face about some of the key decisions they're making about their teen drivers. We did face-to-face interviews of parents of 16 to 17-year-olds at driver licensing offices in three states, Minnesota, North Carolina, and Rhode Island. I don't show it on this slide, but we did interviews at least three licensing offices in these states, and mostly due to resources, we weren't able to interview at all a licensing office, so we tended to cluster our interviews at the offices in the big suburban urban areas where we could get a large volume of parents. We conducted the interviews while the teens were taking their first driving test, and we had a great participation rate. We had 93% to 96% participation rate, and I think that's partly, frankly, because the parents were kind of a captive audience. They were sitting there while their children took the driving test with really nothing else to do, and obviously their teen safety was very much on their mind. We interviewed about 300 parents, and the interviews were conducted in the late winter and spring of 2006. My next slide will show you the licensing laws in these states. We wanted states that were different in terms of licensing laws, and not unexpectedly, there were also pretty significant differences in socioeconomics among these three states. The topics we looked at were the age of licensure, how they were going to monitor their teen's driving, and then how they were choosing the vehicle for their teen. These are the licensing laws, and I realize with some of these slides, there's a lot of information packed into them. The main point I want to make with this slide is just that the three states did have different licensing laws in some pretty important ways. We excluded states that allowed teens to be licensed at 15. But you can see, for example, two of these states allowed teens to get a permit at 15. In Rhode Island, the minimum permit age is 16. They all required driver's ed. They had different holding periods for permits. Two of them required that the teen demonstrate or certify a minimum number of practice hours. Two of them licensed at 16, the third at 16, 6 months. And then Minnesota, according to the way our institute rates graduated licensing laws, we don't consider Minnesota as a three-stage law state in that they don't have a nighttime or a passenger restriction for newly licensed drivers. North Carolina and Rhode Island do. So I first want to show you what we found in terms of the timing of the learner's permit and the driver's license. We gathered information that would allow us to figure out the age at which the teens in the three states got their learner's permit. And the three states are shown here. And again, I realize there's a lot packed into these slides. This shows the cumulative percent of teens that got their permit by age. The age is measured along the x-axis. And what you can see here, especially if you look at the yellow line, this is Rhode Island. Rhode Island doesn't allow teens to get a permit until 16. So obviously no one had a permit until that point. But then what you see is immediately after the teens turn 16, you have a very big rush of teens rushing in to get their permit. So that by the, as you go over time and you look toward the end of the 16th year, Rhode Island is almost catching up with the other states. We also looked at the age at which they took the driving test. And to make a small point, these were teens who took their driving test. They didn't all pass. Especially in Minnesota, about a quarter of the teens didn't pass. And the rate in Rhode Island was almost 100%, so they did vary somewhat. But this is the age at which they took the driving test. And again, you see these substantial differences among the states, reflecting, in, for the most part, I think, the differences in the laws. And you can see, again, in Rhode Island, even though they delay licensure, they catch up very quickly. So as soon as the teens can get the take their driving test, they rush right out to do that in Rhode Island. You see a difference between North Carolina and Minnesota. North Carolina requires that the permit be held for a year. And so I think that explains why the rate of licensure is a little bit slower in North Carolina versus Minnesota. We asked parents how they decided when their teen would get the permit and take their road test, and the results are summarized here. We define getting the license or permit quickly as within 2 months after the minimum age that they could do that. When teenagers got their learner's permit or took the driving test soon after they were eligible, the main reason was that the teen wanted it. I don't really think that's probably surprising to you. When the teen delayed getting the permit, the main reason was driver education related, that they were having difficulty enrolling in driver ed, that the parent believed that the teen wasn't mature enough, or time constraints in terms of school activities or other things just not allowing time. When they delayed the license, the main reason was that the parent either felt the teen hadn't gotten adequate driving or hadn't gotten the state's minimum practice driving, or in Minnesota, needing to get to the minimum age of licensure, which is 16. One thing we found in Rhode Island, I don't think this is really typical, is that in Rhode Island, they schedule your road test on the day that you get your permit for 6 months after that. And so a lot of what seemed to be driving people getting their license quickly in Rhode Island was actually just that scheduling, that the DMV automatically scheduled the road test for 6 months. We asked parents what they thought the minimum age of licensure should be, and you can see the results here. Up to half in the states thought the minimum licensure age should be older than 16, but if you compare that to what these teens are actually doing, you'll see that most of the teens in this study get their license considerably before age 17. So there's a sort of a disconnect there, I think, in terms of what parents think the ideal might be and what their practices are. We ask a few questions about how these parents plan to monitor their teens driving after licensure. And again, I know there's a lot on this slide, but we ask what they most wanted to know about their teen when they were no longer going to be in the vehicle. And parents pretty much had it right about the things they should worry about. Speeding was at the top of the list, distraction, cell phone use, a lot of people mentioned that separately. Passengers, belt use, following the laws, alcohol. And we wanted to ask them about something that's kind of a, there's a lot of attention in the area of teen research on these monitoring devices that are increasingly available to parents. And I have examples of three of them I show here. The computer chip, GPS tracking on a cell phone, and a video camera. These are devices, as you probably know, there are devices now being marketed for parents that can be placed in a teen's vehicle. And the parent gets information from these devices on the teen's risky driving behavior. So, for example, with the computer chip and the video camera, the systems are incident-based in the sense that if the teen speeds, accelerates suddenly, brakes suddenly, an alert is sent to the parent and sometimes to the teen in the vehicle about that event. GPS tracking on cell phones is an incident-based. It lets the parent know where the teen is and can also monitor whether or not the teen is speeding. So we ask parents a couple of open-ended questions. We ask them whether they were aware of these devices that can be placed in vehicles to monitor their teen's driving. And you can see about depending on the state, about half had heard of these devices. We then ask an open-ended question, what kind of device have you heard about? And you can see here, again, there was some difference in states, but computer chips, especially teens had heard of, excuse me, parents had heard of. We then ask a question where we described in a couple of sentences each of these types of devices, and we asked parents whether they would consider using them for their teens. And just for simplicity, I've combined the ranges here on a slide. And you can see that the least parents were least likely to say they would consider using video cameras, about equally likely to consider computer chips or cell phones. When they said they weren't willing to use these devices, it was almost always that they felt they trusted the teen without the device, or that they felt that the device was an invasion of the teen's privacy. And then the final topic that we looked at, and maybe even the most important topic, was we were interested in the vehicle that the teen would be using. So again, this was the day the teen was taking the driving test, so this was a decision the parent had likely already made. You may know that our institute does crash tests, and we rate the crashworthiness of vehicles. And we believe that among the decisions parents make about their teens, they may not be sufficiently aware of the importance of the vehicle their teen is driving. So we have a lot of information. This is a brochure that we have on giving everybody, including parents, advice on safer cars. So we asked parents what vehicle their teen would be driving most. And the first row here shows the percent of the parents who said the teen would be the primary driver of a vehicle. It was about half in two of the states, less in Rhode Island. That's important because if the teen is the primary driver of a vehicle, they're more likely to drive more, not surprisingly, and more likely, therefore, to be at risk for crashing. We asked what percent had purchased a vehicle for the teen. It was about a quarter, and very few had purchased a new vehicle for the teen. We asked them what make, model, and year the teen's vehicle would be. And we've broken out the type and the size here on the slide. The ones that are shown in yellow-green at the top are the vehicles that our institute would recommend. These are mid-sized large cars or minivans. And you can see for the other vehicles we've listed below, we don't recommend SUVs and pickups because they have a high tendency to roll over. We believe the bigger the car, all things being equal, the better, so we wouldn't recommend a mini or a small car. And sports cars are often small, but also because they have high performance, they may encourage teens to be risky. We also asked the model year of the vehicle, and of course we recognize that finances are an important issue for parents, but the advantage to a newer vehicle, if selected well, is that it can have some of the latest safety technology. And so, really, you can see from this slide, a lot of teens out there are driving very, very old vehicles. We asked the parents, what is the most important factor you considered in selecting the vehicle for the teen? If you combine that they already own the vehicle and certain cost factors, you can see that certainly financial considerations were a big part of the picture, along with safety, reliability, the size, and good gas mileage. Now, this was a year and a half ago. The gas mileage might even be a bigger consideration today. We also asked which safety features they considered essential. And what we thought was important here and regrettable, I guess, is that some of the newest, best safety technology, like electronic stability control, side airbags, were really far down on the list of what parents were looking for. It was also really surprising, about 10% said they had not considered safety at all when they chose the vehicle. Then finally, we asked their views on sort of general issues related to vehicle safety. We asked them whether a midsize or large vehicle would be safer for an 18 driver, hypothetically. And most of the parents did know that a midsize or large vehicle was safer. About a third believed that an SUV was safe for a teenager to drive. About half thought a pickup was safe for a teenager to drive. So a lot of the parents did know in theory some of the concepts of safety. So just to summarize this up, we found that state's licensing laws, not surprisingly, had a strong influence on when teens got their permit and when they took their road test. Although about half of the parents in each of the states favored a licensing age of 17 or older, the vast majority of teens obtained licenses well before 17. Only 37 to 59% of parents said they'd heard of in-vehicle monitoring devices. They were least interested in using the ones that employed a video camera. And they were most, if they were not interested in the devices, this was usually because they said they trusted their teens. And finally, although a majority of parents understood some of the important criteria for choosing a safe vehicle, many of the teenagers in our study were going to be driving vehicles that provided inferior protection in a crash. We wrote a couple of papers based on this study, and they've been accepted for publication in the Journal of Safety Research, and I'd be happy to send you those papers if you would like a copy. Well, you probably know insurers are very interested in teen safety now. A number of insurers have special programs for teens. So I guess I wouldn't have much to add other than what you've said, that for insurers, obviously they're concerned with the replacement cost, the cost in the event of a crash. But they're also aware of, especially with something like electronic stability control or side airbags, the benefits of those. So I'm not sure that I can really answer your question directly. And again, we recognize that parents have to balance all these things when they consider a vehicle for their teen. And so our goal is just to make sure that parents are really aware of the importance of the decision. And you can get a vehicle that's several years old that actually does have electronic stability control and side airbags. It doesn't have to be a brand new vehicle.
Would you please,
actually I can, because my son is 16. He just got his license. And I can tell you the biggest sense of security I had was that we did buy a new family car. It's not just his car, but a Saab. In fact, if you go to our website, we have a wonderful website. We have all the results of our crash test, and we now have something called a top safety pick, which means that the vehicle had to have a good rating in our front, our side, and our rear crash, which looks at the head restraint part of the vehicle, and also has electronic stability control. So we bought a used Saab 9.3, which is a mid-size vehicle that has, as I said, electronic stability control and side airbags. But there are others. Some of them tend to be the more expensive vehicles, but there are not expensive vehicles that are available now. So it's not just a matter of finances, I think. We would say, in general, an SUV is not the best choice for a teen because of the tendency to roll over. Now, electronic stability control is mitigating that to some extent, but putting it, you know, sort of in a jargon way, it's a lot of vehicle for a teen to handle.
Right.
So I think we would still... especially, you know, they're not supposed to have... A lot of states are not supposed to have passengers, but also the more passengers you add to a vehicle, an SUV often has more seating potential. So we would still say to steer clear of SUVs and pickups. Yes, which was speeding. Yeah. That was just last night, you mean? There was also a crash that got a lot of attention in New York State where five graduating senior women were killed, and that also involved an SUV where they tried to pass someone, they overcorrected, a truck was coming. There were other things, including text messaging, involved in that. But, you know, again, we would just say an SUV, at this point anyway, an SUV and a pickup is not an ideal vehicle for a teen. It's just a lot of vehicle to handle. The SUVs and pickups are built higher from the ground, so their center of gravity is higher. A minivan is actually a very safe vehicle. It doesn't have that same tendency to roll over. I forget the percent, though, but there were very few teens, not surprising, that were driving a minivan. It's probably not, you know, a popular teen vehicle, but it's a very, very safe vehicle, comparable to a midsize or large car. Possible.
I think that you don't do one. It's better than
I mean, I think you could have a speed governor that does not allow you to go over a certain speed. I don't know how expensive it would be, but I know that there's technology that can do that. But one thing I would say is that in the Kelly and I and PRG, we do a lot of studies with PRG, looked at the crashes of newly licensed teens in Connecticut. And one thing that you could see is it's not necessarily speeding per se. What we found is we found speed, I think, was the primary factor, but it was often going around a curve on a slippery road. So it wasn't the speed per se as the fact that it was too high a speed for the conditions of the teen. So I think that speed governors would help with some crashes, but probably not with crashes like that.